National Broadcasting Company presents Lives of Great Men, a new series on great leaders in human progress presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author of A Book of Meditations and many other books. In his talks, Dr. Griggs will build a story of civilization based on outstanding characters through the ages and how each one influenced his own and future times. This evening, Dr. Griggs will discuss Savonarola, moral prophet of the Renaissance. We present Edward Howard Griggs.
My friends, Savonarola is a prophet of gloom and fire, arraigning the evils of a corrupt time, standing like a granite rock in the stream of the age, seeking to dam its waters, only to be swept down by their returning flood. That artistic awakening, which began in the 13th century in Italy, gained increasing momentum across 150 years and culminated in the latter half of the 15th century. We rightly call that period the Renaissance, for it was the rebirth of the natural life of man, the discovery again of the beauty of the earth life, with the hunger to express it in all forms of art. With this dominant motive, there was a looking backward to the classic past, for as the Italians awakened, they became conscious that the ideals they cherished had received wonderful expression in the old Greek world. So they imitated with devoted enthusiasm everything they could recover from classic culture. The Renaissance further set free all the energies of mind and spirit, resulting in marvelous creative productivity in all fields of art and intellect. Such periods are inevitably quick passing. Men descend again to the common plane of life, but they cannot forget the vision upon the heights. Like Lazarus raised from the dead, they are never the same again. Such periods involve germs of quick decay. Men cannot spend themselves so lavishly without exhaustion. Moreover, the dominant naturalism could readily be corrupted. It was easy to pass from the sensuous to the sensual. Greek vices were copied as freely as Greek art. With the reaction upon authority and the freeing of all energies, the Renaissance shows extremes of high and low, noble and base, side by side. The epoch was nevertheless deeply rooted in the spiritual life of the period of St. Francis and Dante. That was the minor motive, but strong enough to contribute more than half of the content of Florentine art. Savonarola was the prophet of this minor motive of the Renaissance, seeking to stem the tide of sensualism and carry the world back to the deeper religious life of the Middle Age. Here lies the significance and the tragedy of his mission. He was born in 1452 in Ferrara, then ruled by the brilliant Este family, for whom his grandfather became court physician. Even in boyhood, he reacted strongly on the careless, pleasure-seeking society about him, as shown in a poem produced at 20 on the ruin of the world. So at 22, without consulting his family, he suddenly fled from Ferrara and entered the Dominican monastery at Bologna. He wrote his father, telling where a paper could be found on contempt for the world, which he had written and which explained his action. He remained 7 years in the monastery. His intellectual gifts were quickly discovered, and he was given the instruction of novices. Thus he had 7 years of intensive study, mastering the whole field of medieval theology and philosophy. At 30, he was sent to Florence and went to live at the monastery of San Marco. A half century earlier, Fra Angelico had been called down from his 18 years of monastic brooding on the heights of Fiesole to fresco the walls of the rebuilt San Marco. As Savonarola came to dwell among these exquisite spiritual paintings, his first impression was that Florence was not like the Ferrara and Bologna he knew and condemned. As he went about the city, however, and saw the conduct of the people, and particularly of those gathered about the court of the Medici, he came to feel that all the brilliant art and culture of Florence rested on a rotten foundation. Appointed to preach in San Lorenzo, he had a small and dwindling audience. His voice was thin and shrill, his manner awkward. His thought had not yet matured. Thus he remained without response, while Fra Mariano was preaching to a thronged church nearby in the polite rhetoric fashionable at the hour. In disgust, Savonarola left Florence and went into northern Italy. His power as a preacher first flamed forth in the hill town of San Gemignano, then in the larger city of Brescia. Lorenzo the Magnificent heard of his fame, and desirous of adorning Florence with every form of art and excellence, invited Savonarola to return. He did so and went again to live at San Marco, beginning preaching in the church adjoining. Soon the crowd was so great that he had to remove to the cathedral and preach daily there. Almost at the start, he began attacking the manner of life of Lorenzo and the circle about him. Naturally, Lorenzo was indignant, remarking, "I invite this man to my house, and he insults me at my own table." Savonarola is said to have replied, "Because a stranger throws a bone to a dog, shall the dog turn on his master?" Possibly the conflict might have ended differently had Lorenzo not realized that he was stricken with mortal disease, with the result that he quietly withdrew, leaving Savonarola the supreme spiritual authority in the city. The culmination of his leadership came through the events of the year 1494. Charles VIII descended upon Italy, advancing toward Florence, and Piero de' Medici, degenerate son of noble father, fled to the camp of the French king, and to gain terms for himself, gave over to the monarch the keys to the fortresses on the Florentine frontier. When the news reached Florence, the city was in a terrified uproar. Mobs gathered, tore down the symbols of Medicean authority, advanced to San Marco, and demanded of Savonarola that he save them. The friar accepted the mission and went to the camp of Charles. Just what he said, we do not know. But Savonarola viewed the king as that scourge of God he had repeatedly prophesied. He apparently warned the monarch that if he punished only the guilty, he would be God's instrument. But if he allowed his brutal soldiery to injure the innocent women and children of Florence, God would stay his hand and his mission would remain unfulfilled. The king listened, and Savonarola returned to Florence with better terms than had been imagined possible. He was the hero of the hour. The people practically said to him, "You have saved us, now rule us." And in spirit, though not through any formal office, he accepted the task. In one aspect of his political leadership, Savonarola was most fortunate as a forerunner of representative democracy. Florence was then a direct democracy. The situation was that if any citizen could get into the palace of the Signory and ring the great bell, that automatically called the voting citizenship together in the square before the palace. While there, they could do anything, exile a leader and call another back, abolish the Constitution and make another before they went home to supper. You can see why the Medici could easily become dictators by flattering the crowd. Savonarola sought to restrain the popular whim and establish a republican representative government, somewhat on the model of Venice. In another aspect, he was not so wise, for he strove to make Florence a theocratic state with Christ as king. Such an institution is always dangerous, since confusing moral obligations with those springing from the acceptance of a particular creed. Savonarola endeavored to make the belief and practice of the weepers, as his followers were called, law for the community. He sought to substitute a religious carnival for the worldly one. As early as 1492, the Florentines were urged to bring their personal adornments and the paintings from their walls. These were heaped in a pile before the palace of the Signory, and although a Venetian merchant offered 22,000 golden florins for the plunder, the offer was indignantly refused, and the stuff was burned. All this was brilliantly spectacular, and caused... Anything may become the last interesting novelty, even religion. The gray dress of the Piagnoni women and their simply smooth hair seemed beautiful in a novel way, in contrast to the extravagant gowns and towering headdress of the Medicean women. For the time being, Savonarola had the city at his feet. Now, nothing else is so dangerous to a leader as sudden and universal popularity and success. Why? Because the enmity that is always there takes to cover. But let the tide turn, it comes to the surface with increasing menace. That is what happened to Savonarola. Take his preaching. During this time of political leadership, he was in great spiritual conflict. He would mount the pulpit steps so worn with fasting and prayer, he could scarcely drag his body up them, and begin speaking in a voice so weak only a few rows could hear him. Suddenly he would seem to become transfigured, his body erect, eyes flashing and voice deep and resonant. He would lift the vast throng to spiritual exaltation or break them to tears. If, however, you imagined all who heard him went home to practice his teaching, you would be far wrong. A nucleus of followers strove to obey in conduct. Around them was a crowd who enjoyed being played upon by this master in sounding the chords of the heart. Consider his three reiterated prophecies. They were so simple. The church and the world are corrupt and will be scourged. Through the scourging, they will be purified, and these things will happen quickly. Who that looked out thoughtfully on the age could fail to see the truth of such moral pronouncements? There is the more special sense in which a man is called prophet, meaning that he possesses supernatural power to foretell events. Did Savonarola believe that God had given him that power? Apparently, yes, as his compendium of Revelation indicates. In any case, it was for such foretelling that the throng breathlessly listened. He was said to have prophesied the death within a brief time of the three most important rulers in Europe, and the three died soon after. It was widely repeated that on his return to Florence, he had announced that he would preach 8 years and die a violent death. And that, too, was fulfilled. The turn of the tide came through the struggle with Rome. When the year that Lorenzo de' Medici died, a member of the Borgia family became pope as Alexander VI, Savonarola was not disturbed but benefited by being freed from Lombard control. The Roman authorities welcomed Savonarola's efforts for moral reform. His reiteration of the corruption and coming scourging of the church, however, seemed to them a fouling of his own nest. There was further the desire to crush the Republic and restore the Medici. Efforts were made to conciliate Savonarola, extending to the offer of a cardinalship, which he declined. He was then sent to Prato and Bologna to preach, but Florence needed him, and he returned. He was next summoned to Rome for examination on his prophecies. He declined to go, pleading his recent desperate illness. Next, an order came that he should cease preaching, and he obeyed. The moment his voice was still, the enmity and opposition came exultantly to the surface. The very existence of the Republic was threatened. At the wish of the Signory, he resumed preaching. A bull of excommunication followed, to which Savonarola replied, defending himself. Then Rome threatened her final weapon. Were he not silenced, papal interdict would be laid upon Florence, making her an outlaw city. The merchants could not endure this. Pressure was brought to bear on the Signory, who silenced Savonarola. Then, indeed, the elements of opposition came to the front. His friends took to cover. The whole city seemed to have turned against him. The crisis came through the trial by fire. A brother of a rival order challenged Savonarola to pass through the fire with him and let God decide whether or not he was his prophet. Savonarola was far too wise to be caught that way, tempting God, demanding a sign. So refused, but an enthusiastic brother accepted in his place. What was he to do? Should he forbid the trial? Had God overruled him? So day slipped by day, and the trial came. A pile of material was erected on the square before the palace. The people thronged the space assigned them. The rival orders marched in with banners flying. Just what happened is uncertain. Apparently, a dispute arose as to which brother should enter the fire first. A rainstorm broke. It was evident the trial could not be held that day. The orders withdrew to their monasteries and the people to their homes. But bloodlust had been released in the Florentine populace. A mob formed, proceeded to San Marco and stormed the monastery. Savonarola and the two accused with him were haled to prison. Then followed torture to compel him to recant. As muscles and nerves were pulled apart on the merciless rack, he is said to have shrieked out recantations, which he took back the moment he was released. At last, sentence of death was passed. Three scaffolds were erected on the square where the vanities had been burned and the trial by fire held. Savonarola and the two condemned with him were hanged and their bodies burned. Then, when it was too late, Florence realized that she had destroyed the best man in the state who stood between her and tyranny. Savonarola was not only a forerunner of the Reformation, but still more of the counter-reformation within the Mother Church of Christendom, which indeed it was his aim to achieve, seeking only the one thing most needful, the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Savonarola was narrow with the noble narrowness that redeems the world.
Savonarola, moral prophet of the Renaissance, has been the subject of the sixth program in a new series titled Lives of Great Men, presented by Dr. Edward Howard Griggs, distinguished lecturer, critic, and author. Copies of last week's talk on Dante, supreme interpreter of the medieval world, and tonight's discussion of Savonarola may be obtained by addressing the National Broadcasting Company, Radio City, New York, or the station to which you are listening. This is the National Broadcasting Company.